This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Let's bring on Debbie Antonelli, who has been very, very busy. She has been all over the place, the ubiquitous one. Debbie, good morning. How are you?
What's up, fellas? Good to see you guys this morning, as always.
All right. So we're the last day of March, and we're going to get to the finish line.
Wait, it's Pack, hang on. It's Wednesday, Debbie. We're in San Antonio. We're in San Antonio, Debbie. It's Wednesday. Yeah. How's that?
That's how we roll.
Yeah. I had to check the calendar this morning. I wasn't really sure what the date was, but I knew where I was. So I'm in good shape.
You know what? You got to start somewhere from that perspective. But last night with Louisville, and Wes and I have talked about it a bunch already this morning. For Jeff Walls, the first half, perfecto. Right, Stanford's not making threes. Yeah. Dana's on fire. You're in a rhythm of game. You got a nice working margin. You bump it up to a 14-point lead early third quarter. You figured at some point in time, Stanford, because of who they are, their DNA, a one seed, all that stuff, was going to make a run, and they did. And then there was a knockout punch to begin the fourth quarter. But, Debbie, were you surprised that Louisville never had a run of their own once Stanford caught them?
I was a little bit surprised, but I also know that Jeff Walls is ahead of schedule with his program to get to this point. I'm not sure at the beginning of the year they thought they would be here with the youth that they had, but very talented. But when you get to the second half of an event like this where there's so much on the line and you've never been in that situation before, you hope that your team's got enough juice to be able to do what you're saying, but there are times in a game because of the profile of the game that I think you lose a little bit of your focus. And, you know, Stanford went on a run. They spaced the floor. They started making shots. And it became really challenging for anything that Jeff tried. And listen, Jeff is an incredible game adjuster. And, yes, we did know that Tara Vanderveer, who also is a tremendous game adjuster, was going to come out in the second half. And her percentages were going to change. So you knew they were going to make a run. I was a little bit surprised that Louisville couldn't handle some of that counter. They led for three quarters of the game, and then they just didn't have enough juice at the end.
Debbie, is it also a case, too, and you bring up a really good point here. I mean, the Louisville team that took the floor last night, for the most part, now granted, she's a phenomenal player and leaves a great legacy in terms of success with Dana Evans, but for the most part, the rest of that team comes back, including Haley Van Lith, Olivia Cochran, all who we thought were pretty good, but unknowns when the year started, and now we have some knowns about what Louisville's going to be, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they're ahead of schedule, guys. I mean, they lost three players, two to the WNBA, another who's playing professionally from last year, and Jeff's been saying it all year. You just didn't know when it might catch up, if it would catch up with this group, but this is a team that played with Mikasa Robinson at 5'7" at the power forward position, and she can't throw it in the ocean. So think about the kind of job that that Jeff had to do to scheme, Wes. I mean, you know, that's an incredible job to get to this point, to the Elite Eight. And I'm not blowing smoke at Jeff. I mean, Jeff's not a guy that wants you to blow smoke at him, but he's done a phenomenal job. This is a great team coming back next year. Dana Evans is the all-time winningest player in the history of that program. Nobody's won more than Dana. I think she might be a strong candidate for the Wade Trophy. I think her body of work was outstanding all season, and she did have a dip, but she did come back. So this is going to be a really challenging team next year. The NC State will be loaded next year. I mean, the state of the ACC is in really good shape, and I think those two teams will be back at the top. And I also saw Nell Fortner got a couple of her seniors to stick around for another year, Lorella Kubai and Kiara Fletcher. So that's a good sign as well. So I know Jeff is disappointed. I'm sure that Dana is disappointed and the rest of those players. But to experience what they did this year at this level will help them through the summer in their workouts when they come back together next fall.
Debbie, what is your position on the transfer portal? I mean, we've discussed this a lot on the men's side. There's, what, over 1,300 student-athletes now in the transfer portal, and that number's not going the other way. It's going to keep on going. But from the ladies' game and where, again, the sport's growing like crazy and making huge leaps and bounds, But your position on the transfer portal, good, bad, indifferent, to be determined. Where do you fall on this one?
Well, I've already been taking orders while I've been here because I'm creating some T-shirts that says hashtag transfer portal, and I'm going to start wearing that around and see if maybe somebody wants to pick me up or maybe I can find a better deal somewhere. I don't know. It's free agency at its best, that's for sure, guys. I don't really know. I'm indifferent to it. It's here. It's not going away. The genie's out of the bottle, so to speak. I mean, if this is what free agency is supposed to be in an amateur sport, then that's what we've created. And the leaders in our game have helped create it. So, you know, this is what we're dealing with. This is the way it's going to be. I think it's just a new way of living inside college basketball and the transfer portal and recruiting out of the transfer portal. And all. I think it's just going to redefine the way we do everything about the game, the way we recruit. You know, we're finding out that this summer, because no one could do in-home visits, that it saves a lot of time and money to just do them on Zoom. I think we'll still come back with some, you know, summer events to allow players to be evaluated. But I think the way we spend money on recruiting is going to ultimately change because you're limited in how much contact you can have with them anyway. So why spend a bunch of money with five contacts and one in-home visit when if they're not happy or if they are happy – but they think that they can get a better experience somewhere else that they just leave. I think it's a time to reconfigure everything that we do.
Well, okay, that brings me, you walked it to the right point here in that I think you see the game as a whole better than anybody else, especially on the women's side, but you also see the men's side too. And in fact, I think you and Jay offer perspective occasionally that needs to be considered. For example, a couple of years ago, you talked about just scoring in the women's game and shooting, and it had to be better. And it was part of the product we now see that people were so excited about mm-hmm. the other night with Baylor UConn and things like that. All right, let's look at basketball as a whole. And you were in Indianapolis on the men's side with CBS and Turner, and now you've been to the women's side in San Antonio. I talked to an assistant coach yesterday who said, we have to understand the portal. But the portal can't run your program. You fundamentally still have to be able to build programs. Is that a concern you've got that some schools, some programs are going to lose sight of the building process?
Well, I think that's a part of your building process. I think it's another way of looking at it. But definitely the transfer portal is important for every coach. It doesn't matter what you need. Let's say Louisville, Dana Evans, just for example, since we're talking about Louisville. What if Jeff really wanted to find just a point guard that he just needed for a year? He could go into the portal and he could find there's several point guards that are in there that have high-level Power 5 experience, that even have NCAA tournament experience, that might want to come mm-hmm. to Louisville because, hey, Louisville looks like, you know, they could win the national championship next year. I always make light of it and call it, we're all taking our talents to South Beach. I mean, LeBron made that statement famous, and that's the way I feel that the teams are and coaches are putting stuff together. I mean, you can pick and piecemeal what you need now, and I hope that we don't lose sight of the entire college experience. And as a parent who pays tuition for three kids, mm-hmm. when you put yourself in the transfer portal, especially right now on this year where everyone can come back, how do you know that you're not giving up a $250,000 scholarship opportunity that you're not sure you're going to get? Because if you do put yourself in the portal because you're trying to make your situation better, are you really making your situation better academically? And remember, guys, we're not talking about NBA money on the women's side. It's a completely different ballgame financially and economically on the women's side. So it's an interesting conversation. It's one that, as a parent who does pay tuition, I'm concerned about a player giving up their full scholarship with all the amenities, because a lot of people don't understand how great it is for these kids. The way they're taken care of in the student-athlete welfare, the nutrition, the massage, the masseuse, the way they travel, to how they travel. It's a situation where, in some cases, if you you may never, ever be on a charter flight again the rest of your life or stay in the Ritz-Carlton again in your life because you might not ever be able to afford it. But that's kind of the way we take care of these athletes. And I'm not disparaging that. I'm just telling you it's a fact of what you have to evaluate when you take a look at the whole picture about taking yourself out of your situation and putting yourself in the portal for a risk that you're going to be picked up.
Debbie, just out of curiosity's sake, it has unfortunately nothing to do with the ACC this particular year, but who do you think comes out cutting down nets on the men's and the women's side now that we know who the Final Four contestants are?
Well, you know, I was just thinking before I came on with you guys this morning that, you know, I've had a chance on the men's side to cover Houston and Gonzaga. So that's two of the Final Four teams on the men's side that Carter Blackburn and I got to experience covering their teams in the tournament. So I'm pretty excited about Gonzaga. I picked them from the beginning. I really don't see anybody beating them. I don't see them having a dip. I don't see anyone having a bad day. I don't see anything happening to them. They can even absorb an injury or foul trouble at this point. They're so good. And on the women's side, it's really challenging. I think South Carolina has their hands full with Tara Vandeveer and Stanford. I think South Carolina is playing their best basketball, but I picked Stanford before we got here, so I'll stick with that. And on the other side, I think Connecticut is going to be challenged by Ari McDonald because there's nobody like Ari McDonald in college basketball on the women's side. But I think UConn has too much, and it could be Stanford and UConn. And I think Tara, it might feels like a little magic for her this year. And she hasn't won one since 1992, 29 years. Wow. So I'm just going to pick Stanford because that's who I thought would be the team that would get there at the end.
All right. Good stuff as always.
Hey, by the way, let's make no mistake. The broadcast schedule might be over, but the free throw schedule is not. All right.
No, it's not, so, guys. Nothing and I'll but be net. Back in a – I'll be needing your help again. I'll be back. In 2 years, we've raised over $210,000 for Special Olympics, and we're going to need your help. And you guys were a huge part of it last year, and you just inspired me for my morning workout. So I'm getting ready to pump it up right now.
We're in.
All right,
whatever
Debbie,
you need.
Debbie, I got late breaking news for you. We are inside of an hour of Packer finding out whether or not he's going to need a, quote, knee procedure.
Ooh.
So here's our – here's our goal. Our goal is that maybe if the schedule works out, we find our way to the low country and actually shoot the free throws this year.
You know what? You guys are welcome. You can pick whatever hour you want. I would love to have you here. And then after your hour, I'll set you up at Bulls Bay, and you guys can go knock it around over there for a little while, and we'll have a blast.
Well, I'm in, Pac. See, look at that. I'm in.
Well, just roll me around wherever you need me. I'll be in the wheelchair.
No excuses, Pac, man. No excuses.
Yeah. No excuses. I can shoot. Hey, I sit in this position damn near 19 hours a day. So you think you stick me in a wheelchair for rehab? That won't be called. It's not going to affect my life one iota. It's a natural fit.
Oh, you got to shoot to your own.
Thank you, Debbie.
Off,
I got it. I got it.
You're the best.
You guys
Thank
are great.
You. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, Wednesday edition continues. Talk a little men's lacrosse here at the bottom of the hour. North Carolina and Duke. It's 1 and 2 getting after each other tomorrow night right here on ACC Network. That will be, and let me tell you something. If you like offense, this is your kind of gig because these two can flat out light it up. But we'll get to lacrosse in a second. All right, so our topic today, where folks have had some fun, 844-SAY-ACCN, you get to tell us favorite school, founding father, or the person that put it on the map, that just set the foundation for everything else to roll in there, right? That's what we're looking for today. All right, you ready to roll? 844-SAY-ACCN. Let's go down to the great state of Florida, where Dustin has been holding patiently. Dustin, good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
We're great. What's up?
Great.
Oh, I got, you know, kind of the top three. My school doesn't have the years of time that most of the schools in the ACC have, plus the time in the ACC, being a Seminole fan, but we have some great coaches and done a lot in the short time we've been playing sports.
Let me
my big three would be Danny Lettweiler, baseball.
Hmm.
and what he did there started off the baseball program.
Okay.
And with basketball, Don Lukes.
Wow. Okay.
And then, of course,
all right.
With football. Football, it goes back and forth on me. You have, you know, Tom Nugent, the creator of the Power Eye, but I lean more towards Bill Peterson, the coach of coaches, as he's known.
Dustin, thank you for the phone call. Right. Those are three names that, quite frankly, I would never have guessed. Because I'm thinking Florida State football. Call me crazy. Call me nuts. Call me out of touch. But I would have gone Bobby Bowden there, I believe. I think Bobby Bowden's the guy that kind of set it going. Now, he showed up in that erector set that you had at the time and said, you know what, we're going to go load up and go get some players. We'll play anybody, anywhere, anytime. And he started building it. And brother, did he ever. To me, you're looking at him on the screen. That's the guy right there. And the baseball suggestion, this guy Mike Martin wasn't bad either, if you want to go that route, well, Wes. Just saying.
Yeah. I think that when you talk about Bobby Bowden, you first of all have to remember where you were and what you became. That's the integral part of this. Bill Peterson, Perry Moss, these guys that coached at Florida State ahead of that, certainly give them credit for starting the programs and putting girders in the ground, but you didn't become a thing until Bobby Bowden became the head football coach.
That's right.
Danny Littweiler is a name that baseball people will know, but, you know, Dick Houser, Mike Martin, Woody Woodward, who were all involved in their baseball program at Florida State, are the names that will be top of mind. Now, Danny Littweiler's contributions to baseball, unmatched. Danny Littweiler, by the way, lived to about 95 years of age. But, Pac, here's the two things Danny Littweiler's known for that impact baseball at every level today. Danny Littweiler helped develop the composite for what most people know as a product called Diamond Dry, which is to help fields recover after rain, right? He did that as a part of being a baseball coach. The other thing is Danny Littweiler also developed training principles for pitching. Now, I want you to think about this. Think about how common this is today, and this is the guy that did it. Danny Littweiler was involved in radar technique for baseball pitching. He was one of the first guys ever to use any kind of speed measurement from a radar perspective involving baseball pitching, and then combine that with a company that was developing the ability to throw balls, to take pitching out of play. And ultimately what happened was Danny Littweiler was the forefather of the Jugs Corporation, the Jugs gun that measures baseball.
I get all that, which is great, but it's got nothing to do with what is the founding father of Florida State. And that was my point.
No.
I mean, those are fascinating stories if we're telling a testimony on the game of baseball. But if the question is Florida State athletics – I'm going to go wrong answer. That's just me. Now,
I'm with you on Bowden and Mike Martin.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you're going to ask me about basketball, I would throw Hugh Durham in there, too.
No question.
I would throw Hugh Durham in.
72 Final Four.
Took Otto Petty, Ron King, Reggie Royal to the 72 Final Four in Los Angeles. Lost to UCLA.
Right. You and I are on the same page with that. Again, everybody's entitled to their opinion. Yeah. We don't have all the answers. Right. But I think you'd get a hefty debate from Florida State fans on that answer from Dustin. But that's what makes the world go round. Let's go to North Carolina, where Dwayne's up next. Dwayne, how are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. Great topic this morning. I've got two things to throw at you. The first thing is hot dogs. Packer, I'm with you on the hot dogs. Have you ever been to the Roast Grill off of Hillsborough Street in Raleigh?
I have not. Is that a tip?
You have got to do the best hot dogs in Raleigh, period.
All right. I'll make a note of that. Appreciate that.
Yeah. All right.
Yep. Founding father of North Carolina State, I'm going to go with Lou Holtz with football. Interesting. You know, Earl Edwards was before.
I knew this.
But I'm going with my age. And when I first started following North Carolina State was in the early 70s. And he came on 1972, sadly only stayed for 4 years. But every year that he was there, had a winning record, finished top 10, beat Penn State, I know, at least once, if not twice, when they were highly ranked. So to me, Lou Holtz is the one that really is the founding father of football outside of Earl Edwards. And I think most people think of Lou Holtz with Notre Dame, but I think as North Carolina State, they really put his name on the map.
Okay, Dwayne, you brought up an interesting conversation here, an interesting angle to this, because remember, we germinated this entire topic based on Howard Snellenberger, and you just said Lou Holtz didn't stay in Raleigh very long. Pack, I think you talked to Reese Davis about Howard Snellenberger. He was only at Miami, what, 5 years?
Left.
Right in that neighborhood, right?
Yeah, left for a professional job that didn't materialize, was out of football, and ended up at Louisville.
That's it.
And
that's right.
Reese was going to tell the story, which he said the timing of it wasn't right. I can't wait to hear it in full about he asked Howard that question about, you know, what was the thinking there? And Howard apparently gave a very colorful answer, which we couldn't even use on SiriusXM, but I can't wait to hear the story. But yeah, that's correct. But Lou Holtz, again, I'll say this, as a kid growing up as a big NC State fan in the state of North Carolina, Lou Holtz had it going on. He had the Bucky twins and running that veer and that option and everything else. They were a blast to watch. The infamous Blue Bonnet Bowl, I remember listening in the middle of the night. They went out to play Arizona State and destroyed Drew's Sun Devils out there. I think they did.
Yeah.
But I remember the old Blue Bonnet Bowl and all that stuff. But Lou had it going on. Then he left somehow for the New York Jets, which is always a bad idea. Anybody that's thinking of leaving for the Jets, that normally does not work out well. I don't care who you are, what era, or how old you are.
It came at a time, and I will say this, and this is a topic down the road, like Howard Snellenberger leaving Miami. If Howard Snellenberger doesn't leave Miami, what does that look like? Okay? If Lou Holtz stays at NC State, what does that look like? I mean, you could go back to these Rubicon moments all throughout college sports, in pro sports too. But those are two right there that you look at and go, wow.
I think NC State, in my opinion, has had a couple of those. Number one, Lou Holtz, woulda, coulda, shoulda if he would have stayed. What happens NC State if Bo Ryan, you know, doesn't take the LSU gig and
doesn't go to LSU
early? Because he had the potential of being a great young coach who could have just established a monster, in my opinion, at NC State. And I thought Dick Sheridan was a brilliant coach who really had Danny Ford's number in the 80s when the Tigers were a beast back then. And Dick Sheridan, I thought, was a great football coach. And he did coach for a long time. So really, NC State's had a kind of a combination of guys from Holtz to the Bo Ryan situation to Dick Sheridan. And ironically, NC State, I don't believe, has won a ACC football championship since Bo Ryan in 79. So it's been a while, as NC State fans know, from that perspective. But they've had some incredibly talented coaches.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
All right, Wes, you better get your popcorn ready, because 1-2 in shades of blue. That's what we got going on with men's lacrosse. And with that said, let's go to Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Bring on Coach. Joe Bressy joins us. Coach, good morning. How are we doing?
I'm doing great. Just one more day closer to the Clash of the Titans on Thursday night.
It doesn't get any bigger than 1-2. It's Duke and it's Carolina. But for folks that like offense, I mean, if everybody watched the men's Elite Eight between Michigan and UCLA and you fell asleep because nobody can score, that will not be a problem Thursday when Duke and Carolina get together.
There's no question. That's what makes the game so exciting, right? Two great teams. You know, Duke scoring, you know, last seven games they've scored 82 goals in the first half, which is astronomical. And for us, we love to put points on board. We're number one in offense and offensive efficiency as well. So It'll be fun to watch. And two of the best players in the country, Mike Sowers for Duke and Chris Gray for Carolina.
Joe, they say styles make fights. Is that what this is? Is it just a fit with you and Duke? And it just so happens, by the way, it's Duke and Carolina in lacrosse as opposed to basketball or anything else that Duke and Carolina get riled up in.
Yeah, there's no question. When you're so close, 9 miles down the road, and the excitement just builds for everything, it doesn't matter if it's fencing, basketball, lacrosse, field hockey, et cetera. There's just a love to play each other and a mutual respect. We have incredible respect for Coach Danowski's staff and his entire program and team and how they run things. And they're as talented as can be. And I think when you look at the grad students and the extra year of eligibility for kids, I'm so glad it worked out that way from an NCAA standpoint. And now, you know, we have an opportunity to see two great teams, two loaded teams, specifically offensively, to go at it on Thursday.
All right, Joe. So with that said, we could sit here, and you've already given us tons of numbers already from an offensive side on both sides, Duke and North Carolina. Does it come down to who plays the best D? Because you got to assume everybody's going to score here.
Yeah, I think it will. Honestly, I think their face-off guy, Nassau, did a terrific job of giving them possessions when they played Syracuse last week. And for us, we have to be efficient at the face-off X, between the lines, ground balls. Possessions are going to be key because each team can score. So defensively, two very good goalies as well. I know Colin Creek for us has done a wonderful job, played great against UVA a couple weeks back, and on the road, which isn't easy in the ACC, and we're going to have that opportunity again on the road, to play this week. So I'm excited. As a coach, you get a little bit nervous, but we're prepared. We've had 11 days to kind of get ourselves ready. Took the guys paintballing Saturday, gave them a little breather, had some fun, and we're looking forward to it. It's a great challenge. We know it's a regular season game. We also know that, heck, we're going to see them in a month anyway in Chapel Hill.
All right, so whoa, back up here, Pac. We went paintballing with lacrosse players. What could possibly go wrong, Joe?
You know, my biggest fear, I was like, look, guys, I want to have some fun. I want to, you know, we prepared all week last week because we had an off weekend. I was like, look, let's go have some fun, enjoy ourselves, let our hair down a little bit, not think about the game. And you know, we went out, we paintballed. I didn't play this time for the first time because I was preparing a meal for them afterward. They went out, had a blast. And my key question when they got back, first thing I said to the captains, everybody healthy?
Right.
It was fun. The defense dominated the offense, I must say. So right there, we got the defensive win.
Joe, you know, when you have a matchup of one versus two, I mean, there's always going to be hype. I don't care what the sport is. You give me one versus two in the country, it's a big deal. But in this league, with so many good teams, everybody's ranked. It seems like everybody's ranked in the top five when you look at a poll. You can't get too high, right? You hear that old cliche all the time. Hey, it's another game. And I know you want to downplay, but it really is. It's Duke, North Carolina. I don't care if you guys were winless. It'd be a big deal, much less one versus two. But given how good the league is, how do you keep the even keel? Is this where experience on your team, your leadership, captains, everything else comes into play here? Because win or lose, guess what? The next team up will be somebody with a number beside their name.
There's no question. And, you know, that's what makes the rivalry so special is that they're right down the road, Tobacco Road. And, you know, I think from our perspective, you know, after this game, we have UVA again. In Chapel Hill, we have Syracuse, Notre Dame, and then Duke again, all of which are in the top 10 and most in the top five. So, you know, we have to keep it in perspective. One thing we did a really good job of, and I think your point is well taken, we have 17 seniors on our roster, and I know they have 15 graduate students on their roster as well as seniors. Wow. And it's a veteran group on both sides. So I think that kind of experience allows guys to stay the course and just keep playing. We always say play 60 minutes, and that's what we had to do a couple of weeks ago against UVA, knowing that it's going to be an up-and-down type game and goals are going to be scored left and right, and you can't score enough, honestly. You know, if you get a big lead, you never know. I mean, you look at the Syracuse-Duke game last week. Duke was up 12-5, and here comes Syracuse. And that's the way the ACC, and that's what makes it fun to be a part of.
Joe, I'll just ask you this. It's got to be great to have this, though, right? I mean, after last spring and the miss, to have these kind of battles take shape, it's just got to be awesome, not just for you and for the teams themselves, fans, the league. I mean, just the value of the game has got to be so prevalent.
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, you can't get better than this. And it's been it's been fun for the young men to get an opportunity to play. You know, we were all so devastated a year ago, all of lacrosse was, and sports, and, you know, in general. And to have these type of games and the kids getting the opportunity to make up that year and get the year back and summer extending their graduation, you know, for grad school and so forth is just terrific. So we're beyond thrilled for our men, but really for the entire country of lacrosse. I mean, it's just been fun to have it back, and to see it with so much excitement surrounding it is really cool.
And Joe, as far as this may sound like it's a pat on the back of our network, but quite frankly, we discussed this before ACC Network was launched. So we knew about football and basketball because it's always received a ton of exposure. But we're now seeing other sports get a chance to showcase what they do, men and women, right? Whether it be field hockey, whether it be wrestling, which has taken off. But really, lacrosse, as good as this conference is on both the men's and the women's side, it's really a golden opportunity to showcase, like you said, not only the sport, but also the fact that this league is really, really good in both departments, both the men and the women, with the whole big picture here in terms of lacrosse.
No question. It's been fantastic for Olympic sports in general to be on the ACC network. And you guys have done a phenomenal job. And I love the announcers and Quint and Clark and those guys do a wonderful job. And Cotter, I know he has the game with Quint this Thursday. But you guys have just done a phenomenal job of showcasing all the talented Olympic teams in the country. And certainly from an ACC perspective, I mean, you know, it's been fun to watch and for everybody across the country to see it. It's really cool because they don't get a chance to see it on the, you know, maybe on ESPN and so forth. And, you know, the ACC network's done an amazing job of that. And to have a game like this on a Thursday night is really cool. So you're right. Get that popcorn ready. It's going to be fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so when it's 5-4 midway the second half, we're going to lay this one at your feet, okay?
I hear you. I hear you. My defensive coach would be really happy. You know, Coach Metz won't be so happy at the offensive end, but Coach, you will be ecstatic if it's 5-4.
Hey, if it's 5-4, that's what you just say. That's just good coaching. You know, that's just nothing more than preparation and coming up with a game plan, man. That's what that's all about.
No question about that. It'll be fun. I tell you, it'll be fun. I think everybody's ready for it. There's been a lot of talk going up to it, and here we are, you know, 24 hours away, and it's you know, the cool thing is it's a 9-mile drive, so we're, you know, hop on the bus and you're there. We might suit up and buckle the chin straps before we leave Chapel Hill.
I love it.
You know, the interesting part, though, you've already mentioned this, is that here's this mammoth thing on Thursday night, and yet you still got a rotation behind it of all these other really good teams. So, yeah, I get Thursday night and how big it is because it's Duke, Carolina, and, you know, as a friend of mine in the Atlanta area says, you know, schools like that, when they get together, it doesn't matter if it's ballroom dancing or basketball, it's going to count. But the idea is you're going to circle back around to them again, and on the way in that circle, you're going to play really good teams again.
Yeah, well, that's what makes our conference so good. You know, we don't have an ACC tournament this year. We're having 6 regular season games, and we kind of worked it out as a conference and a coaching staff or coaches group. And we just said, you know, 6 games, let's guarantee those, just not knowing what the conference situation tournament would hold. So that makes it interesting for, you know, just confirming games down the road. But, you know, what's funny is you may see them a third time come NCAA tournament time. So, you know, at the end of the day, there's talented teams out there across the country, some just playing each other in their conference. But, you know, for us, this is what's makes it fun for our kids. I mean, they get an opportunity to play great teams, great games on a weekly basis, certainly now throughout the next 2 months.
We can't wait to watch it. And again, you mentioned that Duke Syracuse game last week, which was unbelievable. Went down literally the last second. And something tells me we got more in store coming up tomorrow night. We wish you nothing but the best.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. And keep doing what you're doing. You're fun to watch.
All right, great stuff with Coach Bresci, Pack. That was, you know what? Here we go. 1-2 in lacrosse Thursday night right here on ACC Network. You can order this one up any way you want. It's good.
And on top of that, it's 1-2 with the ladies this weekend. So if you love lacrosse, mm-hmm. men's or women's, ACC locked and loaded here on ACC Network. You cannot go wrong.
All right, time for Food Lions. Food for thought. That's right, Pack. How about that? Oh, we got some of this too. North Carolina is 13-1 against Duke across all sports in the academic calendar this year. You kind of dropped a little hint on this earlier.
Well, I read that stat earlier in the week. I didn't know if we'd ever use it, but I did. That was a little subtle fake left go right earlier today on the show. I mentioned that. And listen, sometimes somebody just has your number. But we're going to play a little lacrosse coming up Thursday night now. I'm telling you, if you've not seen this sport or you're not paying attention, you feel like you're behind, you're not. Just again, we always say pull up a chair on our show. Pull up a chair tomorrow night at 7 p.m. here on ACC Network. And I'm telling you, if you don't like this game, forget about the shades of blue. Even if you got skin in the game, doesn't matter. These two can flat out score. So unlike trying to watch UCLA Michigan last night, which was first to 50, these two on Thursday, I'm telling you, you will see some unbelievable up and down action because they can both light it up.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, final segment of a, again, we say to entertain and inform. That's what we try to do today. I'm not sure that's going to be true in about 15 minutes, but that's a whole separate issue. Now, Wes, we have things
Romanowski, paging Dr. Romanowski, Dr. Romanowski.
He's paging me in about 10 minutes. All right, so we got some things though, to address before we get out of here, though. Some high-level video.
Okay.
High-level video.
Yeah. This one got snuck out to us. Virginia has celebrated a lot here in the pool lately, right?
Yep.
Championships across the board, individual NCAA. Marks, things like that.
National champs.
Apparently, the leadership got in on the action. Roll the video from Charlottesville, where University of Virginia President Jim Ryan and Athletics Director Carla Williams took the plunge, literally.
Cannonball!
President?
Cannonball!
Carla?
Carla, that's a good splash by Carla. Excellent.
Good one, Carla.
Yes.
Next time Carla's on the show, we're going to talk technique.
Carla Williams with the cannonball. Like it.
Yeah. So there you go.
And I
Jim Ryan, by the way.
If you're going to enter the water, though,
stuck it.
And you're not a professional like Meg, our professional swimmer who directs this bad boy, you got to go cannonball.
That's right.
You got to go cannonball. That's the only way to go. Cannonball is the way to do it. That's it. Nice job, though. UVA.
Water disbursement.
Yep. No, you go. You look for a target, staying dry, and then you go cannonball, and you try to angle it. And that's when you got the big boy like me. You get a little big boy in you. You can call some high tide. It's a pretty good deal there.
Tell me last time you dispersed water as a cannonball participant.
Last cannonball for me, for the swimming pool. Is that what you're referring to, swimming pools?
Wherever.
We don't have enough time for me to tell you that other story. Cannonballs would probably be a couple years ago for me for the swimming pool. A couple years.
Cannonball. Nice. Yep. Okay, good.
But that's definitely
is there another
first
story
choice.
That at some point we'll tell in the memoirs?
I told you. We got 1 minute till we're out of here, so I don't have time to tell you.
Yeah.
Might be part of my therapy. Cannonball in the pool.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.